Isaiah 18. Now, I'm going to do something that I've never done before. I'm going to teach you a chapter of the Bible from a different version. Now, listen, I'm not going to get in the habit of doing this. There are people who say, out of the whole book, 66 chapters in the book of Isaiah, and a lot of people feel like this is the very, very most difficult one. And I think so too. And I think a lot of the difficulties are resolved if you just put it in a different English. I think there's some places, the people who I lean to, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar or nothing like that, people who I lean to who are, say, King James people got this wrong. If you follow me in your King James or your New King James Bible, you'll see what I mean. This is, I'm just going to read it and then we'll go back and look at it. Ah, land of whirring wings that is beyond the rivers of Cush, which sends ambassadors by the sea and vessels of papyrus on the waters. Go, you swift messengers, to a nation tall and smooth, to a people feared near and far, a nation mighty and conquering, whose lands the rivers divide. All you inhabitants of the world, you who dwell on the earth, when a signal is raised on the mountains, look. When a trumpet is blown, hear. For thus the Lord said to me, I will quietly look from my dwelling like clear heat in sunshine, like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. For before the harvest, when the blossom is over and the flower becomes a ripening grape, he cuts off the shoots with pruning hooks, and the spreading branches he lops off and clears away. They shall all of them be left to the birds of prey on the mountains and to the beasts of the earth. And the birds of prey will summer on them, and all the beasts of the earth will winter on them. At that time, tribute will be brought to the Lord of hosts, from a people tall and smooth, from a people feared near and far, a nation mighty and conquering, whose land the rivers divide, to Mount Zion, the place of the name of the Lord of hosts. Now you're saying, what, pray tell, is that? You know how it starts off and it says, ho, in this, I'm reading from the English Standard Version. It used to be the Revised Standard Version, which made me puke. Literally thought it was the worst translation in the history of translations. And they redid it. It's called the English Standard Version. It's very, very good. It just is. Like it says here, woe, it starts off in the King James, woe. So the people I rely on, they say it means more like, it's not woe. It's, this isn't the burden of Cush. Okay, it's not a woe, it's an a ho, or a, and in this version I'm reading, it says, ah, land of whirring wings. Now, you read through the commentary and you stress over that, and Chuck Missler, who I'm very fond of, he says, if you've been there once, you know exactly what they're talking about. It's look at this land of shadowing wings. Now, they're all talking about like this, the papyrus boats they made, and they have these sails, and they're kind of wing-shaped and all that. He says, chuck that off. If you step off the airplane, you go to the first place that sells anything, and you buy this thing called a swisher, and it's to keep the bugs off you. That is a land of whirring wings. The place is lousy with flies. Now, we say Cush, okay? If you think Ethiopia, you're doing pretty good. It's parts of what you'd call southern Egypt, Ethiopia, and probably parts of Somalia and the Sudan. So that's what they call the biblical land of Cush, okay? A lot of times you read a newer translation and they will just call it Ethiopia and call it good. You remember, we talk about like Assyria, and I say that's Turkey and Iran and parts of northern Syria. It's not exact, because the borders that we draw now, they're just borders, you know what I mean? They're not intrinsically, so we talk about lands back along and where they extended to and where they, you know, and so they're not exact geographical locations. Like you can say Ethiopia is Cush. You get it. You're smart people. You understand that. Okay, this place, they send ambassadors by the sea in vessels of papyrus on the waters. When Chuck Missler was there, he said they still make papyrus boats, and they went out to, what was it, Tanakirkus Island. He was looking for the Ark of the Covenant Ark, which he thinks is in Ethiopia for a lot of reasons. And so he actually was in one of these papyrus boats. Go, you swift nations, messengers to a nation tall and smooth. They are tall and they are smooth. The word smooth almost means polished. What do you got here? Scattered and peeled. Oh my goodness. What are you going to do with scattered and peeled? It's tall and like polished. Smooth is the idea. Like Ethiopians are hairless on their body. They're smooth skinned. That's the idea. To a people feared near and far, a nation mighty and conquering, whose land the rivers divide. Now you're thinking like Ethiopia conquering. Don't think 21st century. Don't even think 20th century. Think historically. We read in the Kings, there was a million-man army came against Jehoshaphat. I'm pretty sure it was Jehoshaphat. I'm only going by memory. They had a long military history of victory after victory. Okay, they got their head handed to them that, against Jehoshaphat, but that's because they had... Jehoshaphat had God on their team, so you know what I mean? That's kind of more of an equalizer. But before that, they were winning victories left and right. All you inhabitants of the world, you who dwell on the earth, when a signal is raised on the mountains, look, when a trumpet is blown, hear. Okay, listen, I'm going to set up a sign here, and I want you to pay attention to it. For thus saith the Lord, this is what he said to me, I will quietly look from my dwelling place, like clear heat and sunshine, like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. For before the harvest, when the blossom is over and the flower becomes ripening grape, he cuts off the shoots with pruning hooks and the spreading branches he lops off and clears away. What is he talking about? Assyria at this time is coming against Israel. We talked about that at length. Now, Ethiopia is saying, okay, let's partner up and let's defeat Assyria together. Now, you're thinking, well, wow, that's awful generous. Well, it is and it isn't. They had their own self-interest. They thought, okay, we could team up with these people here, this land of Judah, and maybe overcome Assyria. Outside of, you know, if it's one-on-one, we're going to lose badly. So they're coming to Judah's rescue, but it's for their own self-preservation as well. And God's saying, before the harvest, The word here is like, before the flower becomes a ripening grape, he cuts off the shoots with pruning hooks. Because you think Assyria's going to go and they're going to get a harvest, a bounty. So, and God's saying, it's not going to work out that way. It's not going to be as bountiful as you think, okay, is the idea. They shall all of them be left to the birds of prey of the mountains. There's going to be 185,000. I can't remember. It's a lot. One night, they're all encamped around the sea. Next morning, they're all dead. And God says, okay, birds, okay, it's bird food time. It's you creatures of, you people who like to, wolves and coyotes and wild dogs and whatever. It's meal time here. To the point where they shall all of them be left to the birds of prey of the mountains, to the beasts of the earth. The birds of prey will summer on them. All summer long, you know, chow time, and the beasts of the earth will winter on them. It's going to take a year for these people to get eaten sufficiently, you know what I mean? I'm giving you carcasses off to, you know, carrion. Basically, you're just going to be bird chow. We see that in the book of the Revelation. We see it in several of the, prophetic books. And here, I think that's what he's talking about. At that time, tribute will be brought to the Lord of hosts. Now, in this time shall the present be brought unto the Lord of hosts in King James. I think that's better. It's the present. It's not tribute. It's not like, see, he's not pronouncing judgment on Ethiopia. Like, they want to help Judah, and God's saying, oh, that's it. You stand on my last nerve. You've had it. No, of course not. Of course not. He's talking about a time, and of course this is right into the kingdom age, where they're going to bring, in this English Standard Version, tribute in King James, the present. What's the present? Well, that's what Chuck Missler would say, is the Ark of the Covenant, for a lot of reasons. Now, I can parrot all his teaching, but I suggest you, if that sort of thing interests you, I can give you the what I listen to. I think that's, I won't go as far as to say it's biblical, but there's biblical reasons to believe. The Ark of the Covenant, you know the Ark, right? Had the cherubim, the mercy seat on top with the cherubim. Inside was the Aaron's rod that budded, had the Ten Commandments, a pot of manna. You remember that Ark of the Covenant? It was about a chest. You know, it was about yay by yay by yay deep. It was cedar encased in gold, and then it had that gold lid called the mercy seat. We would call it a lid. When you read about it scripturally, it's always handled as a separate object. And properly, what Chuck Missler says is that cover, that mercy seat, is what's going to be given to Jesus from Ethiopia, the present, during the millennial kingdom, during his reign. Is that absolute? No, I don't think anyone will say that. Is there reason to believe that's possible? Yeah, possible. Probable? I'd even go as far as to say probable. But that's my take. We welcome yours. So at that time shall the present be brought unto the Lord of hosts of a people scattered and peeled, again, tall and smooth skin, from a people terrible. Terrible is terrible in battle, always in Scripture, from the beginning hitherto. A nation meted out and trodden underfoot. And see, that's why one of the problems with King James here, it's not that they're meted out and trodden underfoot, it's that they are a nation mighty and conquering. They're not underfoot, they tread others underfoot is the idea. Because he's talking about how terrible they are in battle, and now, in the end of the verse he's saying, they're everyone's whipping boy. Well, they're not. He's saying, no, they're a mighty people, a nation from a people feared near and far, a nation mighty and conquering, and again, whose land the rivers divide. Because you see in King James, whose land the rivers have spoiled. Now, that's America in some people's mind. We got polluted rivers, and see, this is America in prophecy. That, by the way, is weak exegesis, okay? You know, anything that's even familiar, you can say, you can connect the dot. Well, it's kind of like American people just, oh, see, here's the American in the Bible. This is talking about the nation of Cush. Again, Ethiopia. It's got nothing to do with America. But I've heard people, even when it says to the land shadowing with wings, they say shadowing, it goes away into protection. This is the United States Air Force. You're saying, who would do that? Who would really teach like some people? Some people would. I've heard it. And I heard it by, if I named the names, you would recognize the names. But I'm not here to disparage. Because the other thing, too, about this is some of these things, like we're talking about the near and far of these things, it's hard to draw exact lines. Someone can come behind me and say, oh, you know, you should have studied more because this means this. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, depend how much time you want to spend here. You know what I mean? So that is what it is, I think. The land of the rivers is spoiled to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts, Mount Zion. Again, the place of the Lord of hosts, Mount Zion. That is absolutely positive in my mind, always talking about the kingdom. Okay? Chapter 19, the burden of Egypt. Again, burden, heavy, revy. Bad stuff is happening. You can see some of the versions might say oracle, but it's a burden. The burden of Egypt. Behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud and shall come into Egypt. The idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. I guess the idols will be moved. God had a contest with the idols back in the 10 plagues. Those weren't just random willy-nilly. Let's see. I think I'll turn the Nile to blood. I'll infest them with gnats, lice, frogs. I'll turn the sun black. No, those were an assault on Egyptian deities. I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote the book, The Secret War, and he, you know, emphasizes this from his knowledge of Egyptology, and then he connects it to the Bible where, you know, like, they worship the sun god, Ra. Well, our God gave their God a black eye. You see, they worshiped the Nile, and God just took the Nile and turned it to blood. God, it was punishment. It was remedial, but punitive, I mean, but it was also remedial. He was trying to teach the Egyptians something. Your gods are, they're helpless. They're hopeless. They can't do anything. We got these slave people in here, and their God just came and he's beating up all your gods. What are you going to do about it? I think you're worshiping the wrong God. So when it says here, you know, I always think of that, the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence. Well, I guess they will. the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. And I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians. This kind of sounds like a civil war. It sounds like something just happened. And some people have drawn correlation. I mean, we're looking at the last week, we were talking about the fall of Damascus. God's going to stop from being a city. Interesting, you know, Syria's at civil war. Will they break out the big heavy-duty weapons and turn that place to powder? I don't know. But it's interesting, you know, because it talks about, like, Egyptians fighting Egyptians, and you're thinking, well, that sounds like yesterday's newspaper. They had, a civil war, and the new government took over. It was unresponsive to the needs of the citizens, so they had another civil war and got rid of that government, and it's good. Good, I'm on the Egyptians' team. You know, get the right government in there and just keep fighting until they, you know, give you a fair shake. I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians. They shall fight everyone against his brother. Is that what that's referring to? I have no idea. Again, it's hard to draw exact lines, but it's interesting to me anyway. Everyone against his neighbor, city against city, and kingdom against kingdom. Is there a near and far to this? Is this going to happen in the future? I think so. And the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof, and I will destroy the counsel thereof, and they shall seek to the idols and to the charmers and to them that have familiar spirits and to the wizards. That's a bad idea, by the way. And the Egyptians will I give over into the hand of a cruel lord, and a fierce king shall rule over them, saith the Lord of hosts. Is that a reference to the Antichrist? I think so. Again, hard to be too dogmatic. And the waters shall fail from the sea, and the river shall be wasted and dried up. Is this a prophecy against the Aswan Dam? I think so. Many Bible scholars think so. In the 60s and 70s, they built a dam on the Nile, and it has been an ecological nightmare, a total disaster. What happened? Well, we can read about it in these verses. I mean, these are dots you can connect, and I think you can make a good case of it. You know, the people in Egypt, and Russia came and they helped out Egypt and to build this dam. And the engineers, by the way, people, when they start messing with the economy or ecology, you're already in over your skis, right? There is nobody who knows enough to mess with these things. There's always unintended consequences. If you want the economy to work, get away from it and leave it alone. Capitalism is the way, and that'll work, and it'll work tremendously, by the way. It just does. The incentives are there. People will produce. You take away people's reason and incentive. Everyone works for the government, like the Soviet Union before it dissolved. The big joke in Russia was we pretend to work and the government pretends to pay us. Where's the incentive? Well, give people a chance to be excellent and they will. And don't disincentivize them, I don't know if that's a word, by taxing them into oblivion. When you mess with the economy, you get unintended consequences. When you mess with the ecology, you're not smart enough. God put all these things in place, and you try to mess with stuff, and it goes badly. Now, again, you can listen to your heart's content on the by people who aren't Bible scholars who will not even mention at all the 19th chapter of the book of Isaiah, and they will just talk to you about tremendous things happen, bad things happen in Egypt because of the Aswan Dam. And it reads like this chapter. Just point of interest. The water shall fail from the sea, the river shall be wasted and dried up, and they shall turn the rivers far away, and the brooks of defense shall be emptied and dried up. The reeds and flags shall wither. Papyrus until, you know, last half of century was still an ongoing concern, something that they marketed. It was marketable, and the Aswan Dam, because it was now these snails are very prolific because of the dam, and they eat up all the papyrus, and literally the flags, the reeds and flags shall wither, has happened. Just again, point of interest, but that shouldn't surprise us. I mean, The Bible reads like tomorrow's newspaper. You know what I mean? In the newspapers, I don't have any faith in. People lie. God's word never does. And it shouldn't surprise us that God knows what's going on, and he can tell us about it before it happens. The paper reads by the brooks, by the mouth of the brooks, and everything sown by the brooks shall wither, be driven away, and be no more. The fishes also shall mourn, because it was a very good place to fish, and now it's not. The fishes also shall mourn, all they that cast angle into the brook shall lament, and they shall spread nets upon the waters. They that spread nets upon the waters shall languish. Unemployment, that's languishing. Moreover, they that work in fine flax and they that weave networks shall be confounded. This is, I say, ecological disaster. It's affected the whole economy. And they shall be broken in the purposes thereof, all that make sluices and ponds for fish. Surely the princes of Zoan are fools. The counsel of the wise, counsels of Pharaoh has become brutish. How shall ye say unto Pharaoh, I am the son of the wise, the son of ancient kings? Hey, I know what I'm doing. You got to listen to me, Pharaoh, says the engineer, before he ruins your economy. Where are they? Where are the wise men? Let them tell thee now, and let them know what the Lord of hosts hath purposed upon Egypt. Now, I will say, you know, we can laugh and say, you know, because every time Russia tries to do something, they mess up. We like that, right? It's like the Yankees losing. We love it. We can't get enough of it. But God said this is going to happen, whether you use Russian engineers in the Aswan Dam. I mean, regardless, I mean, the fix was in. God was going to, because he wrote about this was going to happen. I don't think he writes it in the sense like, well, I'm looking down the annals of time and I see this is going to happen. Let me call my shot so you all think I'm wonderful. No, he's punishing Egypt. Why? Well, for a lot of reasons. One, their idolatry. We didn't get out of the first verse. The idols of Egypt shall be moved. Now, he's going to give them over to the hand of a cruel lord in verse 3. Why? Verse 4. In verse 3, the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof. I'll destroy the counsel thereof. They shall seek to the idols, to the charmers, and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards. Why else wouldn't I judge it? I mean, they're worshiping false gods. Of course they deserve judgment. The princes of Zoan are become fools. The princes of Noph are deceived. That's a Bible way of saying from north to south. Like if we're talking about Maine, we say Fort Kent to Kittery. This is the Bible way of saying that about Egypt. They have also seduced Egypt, even they that are the stay of the tribes thereof. The Lord hath mingled a perverse spirit in the midst thereof, and they have caused Egypt to air in every work thereof as a drunken man staggereth in his vomit. I love language like that in the Bible. A graphic picture, isn't it? Have you seen that? I hope you haven't done that, but probably I'm talking to a room full of people who some of us have been there, done that. This is what it's like. You know, your counselors and you're, oh, we're the Pharaoh and we're the mighty, we're the princes and we know what we're doing. And you're like a drunken man staggering in his vomit. That's what it looks like to me, God's saying. Neither shall there be any work for Egypt, which the head or tail, branch or rush may do. Unemployment rates are off the chart. He's saying, and I haven't checked. I don't know what Egyptian unemployment is right now. In that day shall Egypt be like unto women, and it shall be afraid and fear because of the shaking of the hand of the Lord of hosts, which he shaketh over it. Shaking the hand, I think, is the idea like this, you know, and they're all like, yeah. When he says become as women, listen, ladies, I didn't write it. Don't come and yell at me. You've come a long way, baby. That's all I can say. And they weren't talking about, I mean, listen, in the Bible day, they didn't know anything about women in combat or anything like that. You know what I mean? So when he's saying they become like women, he's talking about at home, you know, hiding behind the drapes and hoping nothing nefarious or bad happens. And if you're saying, well, that ain't me, I'd be out there on the front lines. Well, that's fine. Again, I didn't write it. He's making an analogy, okay? And of course, that doesn't extend to every woman or anything like that. When you talk to a fighting man, you say, stop acting like a girl. You haven't blessed him, okay? That's the kind of the idea, you know what I mean? When you're saying, you're acting like a little girl, you know what I mean? A man of war wouldn't want to hear that. Okay, let's just keep moving. I'm going to get myself out of mischief here, but I just keep moving, okay? And the land of Judah shall be a terror unto Egypt. Everyone that maketh mention thereof shall be afraid in himself because of the counsel of the Lord of hosts which he hath determined against it. Verse 16, back to verse 16, in that day. Remember what we said about in that day? This is bleeding off into that day. End times eschatological things. Verse 18, in that day shall five cities in the land of Egypt speak the language of Canaan and swear to the Lord of hosts. One shall be called the city of destruction. Hierapolis is probably what's in view here, and the city of the sun is probably better there. Okay? So he's calling out, one of them is going to be Hierapolis. In that day, again, end times, shall they have, and because we're talking about end times, we're talking about five cities in Egypt that swear allegiance to the God of Israel, the Lord of hosts. This has to be like post-tribulation, pre-kingdom age, wouldn't you think? Or somewhere along right in there. We're okay, I see God's on your team. The people come into a belief before they're judged. In that day shall there be an alt, and so much to the point where they learn how to speak Hebrew. I am going up to Jerusalem to worship. I think I got to know enough Hebrew to get around, learn the language so I can, at least worship correctly. I think that's what's in view here. Has that happened? Not since you notice already. I don't know. There's five Egyptian cities that are like dedicated to the Lord of the Lord of hosts. In that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. Do we have Egyptian monuments in Egypt to the Lord now? Arguable, but I would say not. To my satisfaction, people will point at, the Great Pyramid here and say, yeah, and this is why, and I don't know. I've heard a lot of teaching along those lines and stuff like that, and I just, it's different from all the other pyramids, by the way, but you want to say it's to the Lord, I don't know that I'm going there. I think it's talking about a future time when Egypt, by and large, turns to the Lord. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt, for they shall cry unto the Lord because of the oppressors. Read here, in my thinking, the Antichrist and his army. And he shall send them a Savior and a great one, and he shall deliver them. Who would that be? Do you know any other saviors besides Jesus? Well, it starts off, behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud. We've seen that motif before in the return of Jesus Christ. They're calling for a savior, and he shows up and rescues, among other peoples, Egypt. Can you imagine such a thing? Wow. Isn't he a gracious and a good God? The lesson here is like, you may be an enemy of God now, today. It doesn't have to end that way. I mean, what have they done? They've turned to the Lord. They've repented. They called on him for salvation. He showed up and saved them. For my take, I think that's what's being said here. The Lord's going to send them a Savior, a great one, and he shall deliver them. And the Lord shall be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, and shall do sacrifice an oblation, yea, they shall vow a vow unto the Lord and perform it. The Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. Our God. And they're going to vow a vow to him, and they're going to perform it. This is Egypt. Brothers, our Christian brothers over there in Egypt. Is that exciting to you? Because this is to me. And the Lord shall smite Egypt. He shall smite and heal it. I think the idea is like, okay, they're going to go into the time of Jacob's trouble like the rest of the world is, and God's going to smite them. And the Egyptians will give over into the hand of a cruel Lord. And they're going to call on Jesus Christ, and he's going to show up and save them. And they're going to know him to the point where they're going to vow vows, do sacrifices. What do you mean when do sacrifice? Like a sacrifice of praise? No, sacrifice like sacrifices. In the millennial kingdom, there are sacrifices. And that's a story for another time. There's several chapters in the end of Ezekiel that talk about which sacrifices even. Blood sacrifices, not anything else. People argue that point vehemently, mostly animal lovers and stuff, but you can't deny it. If you read the last chapter 40 through 49, is it 48 or 49 chapters in Ezekiel? I never remember. Just read the last, starting in chapter 40 and read the rest of the book and you'll see the sacrifices. And it's not arguable. I mean, it's arguable, I hate that, so therefore it can't happen. Well, no, just read it and you'll see that it's not only can, it's going to happen. So they're going to sacrifice, they're going to vow vows, and they're going to perform it. The Lord's going to smite Egypt, he's going to smite and heal it, and they shall return even to the Lord. And return, you know, I wonder if it just means return, like, you know, come to, but if it's return, you know, when did they turn the first time? Was Egypt ever a God-fearing nation, you wonder? Is early in the Bible when we start reading about Egypt, they're already on the wrong side, you know what I mean? They're going to return even to the Lord, and he shall be entreated of them and shall heal them. Our God is remarkable, and there's no denying that. In that day, again, we're talking about that day, in that day shall there be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. What are we going to do with this verse? And the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptian shall serve with the Assyrians. So there's going to be a highway. Is it like the Autobahn, you know, eight lanes north, eight lanes south, or, you know, is it like, or is it just like a road? I don't know. Are there going to be automobiles in the Kingdom Age? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of this. Well, let's not go too far, right? It's all going to be Priuses in the Kingdom Age. I don't know. I just don't know. But there's going to be a road that goes from Egypt to Turkey. Think about that. In that day, again, in that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land. Is Isaiah getting kudos for preaching this message? This Assyrian's coming to attack Judah. And he's talking about a time when Egypt, and Egypt's a funny place because sometimes they're on Israel's team. They make these alliances with them. And sometimes, so we have Egypt and Assyria and Israel, God's three, big three, so to speak. Really? Now, you'd say Israel, okay, God's chosen people. Egypt and Assyria? Look what it's saying. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, mine inheritance. This is crazy verses. Listen, if I wasn't reading it with my own eyes, I wouldn't even believe it. Assyria is, the Antichrist is called the Assyrian. These people are coming against Israel in the battle of Armageddon. Jesus is going to defeat some and convert others. This is like, every time God's got a judgment, it's like, not to the nth degree. There's always like a place for mercy. There's always a place for grace. It's incredible to me. I'm looking at you people, and you're not like jumping and shouting and stuff like this. I think this is awesome. He's an awesome God. He's really gracious. He's slow to anger. Sometimes, you know, we've been reading these chapters on judgment, and sometimes God's just got to lower the boom and say, okay, that's it. You've just gone too far. But it's always with a heavy heart. We read that God doesn't, in Sunday, Wasn't one of the verses there? We went to Storm's church, and he went through a couple of chapters, actually five chapters in Ezekiel, and they're all on judgment. And God says, I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked. And I thought, like, he was a long time on that verse, and I thought, like, that's just our God. It's not like, ha-ha, you messed up, now I'm going to zap you. Because, you know, the religious God that I grew up believing in, he kind of was that way. You know, can't wait for you to step over the line. I'll show you who's boss. You know, cosmic killjoy. Everything that I thought was fun, he was just going to cloud up and rain all over. And he's this, you know, boss in the sky just waiting to zap me. He's not like that at all. These verses, look at this. What can you say about this? Assyria hasn't even attacked Israel yet. They're going to be routed, severely routed. I mean, God, he says, don't worry. No one's even shoot an arrow there. Don't even worry about that. They're encamped around the city. Look out over the gate, over the walls, and like, uh-oh, this is going to be bad. Next day, they wake up, and they're all dead. God said, yeah, took care of it, sent an angel, no problem. And this is before that. And he's talking about a time when, yeah, you in Egypt, and you're going to have a big highway going here, north and south of Egypt, out of Jerusalem, to the outer reaches here, and people are going to be, it's going to be really handy, you can jump on the highway there, Jerusalem, next five exits, Zion this way, this exit, and blessed be Egypt, my people. In Assyria, the work of my hands. In Israel, mine inheritance. Chapter 20. Listen, it's six verses. We'll get through this. And it's always fun. Listen, naked is fun in the Bible. I don't care what anyone says. And that's just because I have such a weird... my brain is not working correctly. But in the year that Tartan came unto Ashdod, when Sargon, the king of Assyria, sent him and fought against Ashdod and took Ashdod, you remember, is one of the five cities of the Philistines? Hamas country now, in case you're wondering, right? At that time spake the Lord by Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saying, go and loose the sackcloth from off thy loins and put off thy shoe from thy foot. And he did so, walking naked and barefoot. Okay. And I'm wondering about Mrs. Isaiah. Which, is like, so he's walking around town with nothing on and barefoot. You remember he's married to a prophetess? This is probably what happened. He came home. He got this from the Lord, right? He came home and said, honey, I got something to tell you. She goes, yeah, I know. Okay. Well, look on the bright side there, honey. I don't have to wash for the next, I don't know. The reason for this is, and the Lord said, like as my servant Isaiah hath walked naked and barefoot 3 years, yikes, 3 years, for a sign and wonder upon Egypt and upon Ethiopia, so shall the king of Assyria lead away the Egyptians prisoners and the Ethiopian captives, young and old, naked and barefoot, even with their buttocks uncovered, to the shame of Egypt. Now, you read commentary, and they go through great pains to say, oh, he wasn't totally naked. He would have a loincloth or something, because it would be a shameful thing. And they, bring out scriptures, along these lines and stuff like this. I don't want to call anyone a liar or nothing like that, but I would respectfully disagree. When the Egyptians are taken away by the Assyrians, naked and barefoot, it's naked and barefoot, exposed buttocks, I believe, is the word. And I think this is what Isaiah is portraying. By the way, if you want to sign up for prophet, nobody's in the line like, hey, I want to be a prophet. Because this is the type of thing that, it's crazy. Like sometimes God says to Hosea, I want you to go marry a prostitute. I got something to say, and this is how I'm going to say it to the nation. I want you to go marry a prostitute. It's like, prophet? No thanks, Lord. But here's the thing about what you do for the Lord, you don't get a chance to, not really, you don't. You don't get a chance to, decide. You can just be obedient or not, you know what I mean? Does Isaiah say, no, I resign? Because I don't think God accepts resignations. I don't think that's how it works. Anyway, so he's walking around, sky-clad, 3 years, and the point is, this is what's going to happen to the Egyptians when they're taken prisoners, and the Ethiopians when they're taken prisoner by the Assyrians. And they shall be afraid and ashamed of Ethiopia, their expectation, of Egypt, their glory. And the inhabitant of this isle shall say in that day, behold, such is our expectation, whither we flee for help, to be delivered from the king of Assyria, and how shall we escape? Assyria is the bad boy on the block, and they're going to wipe out everybody. And God's going to use them to wipe out Ethiopia, to wipe out Egypt. Not forever and ever, but in that day. And then they're going to come against his people, God's going to wipe them out, and then the star rising will be Babylon after that, and thus it goes. You know, God will use that nation for a rod to chasten everybody, but then he will judge that nation as well. And but we've seen that before. You know, I think you can make a case that America judged Japan for its idolatry during World War II. That doesn't exempt us from judgment. And I think, you know, we're entering into that time pretty quickly. Am I wrong about this? I could be. I don't have a Bible verse to say that God's judging America. You know, our economy's in the toilet. We don't know how to vote if our life depended on it. And don't tell me different, okay, because I will strongly disagree with you. The Supremes don't even know what pornography is. They don't even know how to define it. A five-year-old child can, but once you put a black robe on somebody, all of a sudden they don't know what pornography is. They don't know about when life starts. We're our nation is dissolving in front of us, and there's so many indicators. Well, we listen to divorce rates on the way down, and they're talking about, we listen to secular show. We listen to Howie Carr, okay? Some of you guys listen. I know, listen, I'm so ashamed. I enjoy it so much. But he was talking about people born out of wedlock. In 1947, it was like 3.1%. Now it's 40-whatever percent. It's children born out of wedlock. I don't know. And then you know, in some communities where it's, in the, like the black community and stuff like that, where it's way over 50%. And it's crazy. We're headed for some stormy waters. Is God judging America? I think so, and I pray that I'm wrong. My point is, I think we're being judged by God. I think it's not all at once, like, you know, we get swallowed up in a volcano, or, you know, one superstorm comes and wipes out the whole country. It's a little by little. I almost look at 9/11 as God, you know, firing a warning shot across our bow. And it was good for that week when it looked like America was humble, and, you know, we saw, you know, people who don't really care about God praying on the steps of the Capitol. That was a good week, but it only lasted about a week. And what's happening? I don't know. Are there ministry opportunities? I think so. Because even in judgment, there's mercy. You always remember that. We, as a nation, I don't know. I don't think, you know, I think you're sitting in the only superpower left on the planet, but I don't think it's going to be like that very much longer. I think just pure economics. We're going to slip into a second or third world economy and just keep giving our money away to people who won't work. The Bible has something to say about that, too. We all, you know, I'm not going to go on and on and on. You know the problems that face our country. Welfare and helping people who are less well off, that's a wonderful thing. That's a godly thing. The Bible says if you won't work, you shouldn't eat. I'm going to say if you can't work. We love to help people who can't, you know, they can't, there's issues, and we love to run to their aid. But there's people who, the new thing is now is like, just how do I get out of working forever? Just let the government just mail me check, mailbox money. That's not godly. That's not how any nation should be set up. And it's kind of a horrific thing. Are we being judged by God? You can, you know, you can debate that. It gives you something to talk about on the way home, okay? But I kind of think so. So, I look at these verses, and the big question is all the time, is American prophecy? I don't think so. These arguments, I know. Just take any of these verses and overlay America on it and tell me what you see, you know what I mean? As far as, like, if this works, you know, we turn to, this nation here turns to their familiar spirits, and they see counsel of idols and charmers and wizards. To the degree that America does the same thing as false gods. I think we're more sophisticated. We worship, you know, Chemosh and Molech. We just worship status, wealth, affluence, power, fame. Just different things. Same old gods. They got just different names. Something else there? Okay. Let's stand and pray. Lord, even in these chapters and these verses on judgment, you know, we see your mercy extended to your enemies, even to the point where you bring them close and call them your friends. That's what you did to us. We so thank you for this great salvation, for this. We were your enemies. We didn't care about you. We didn't love you, and you just dramatically rescued us. We praise you. You're an awesome God. People who don't know that, they don't know much. You just, they think you get a lot of bad press. That's too bad, because those of us who know you're gracious and you're good and you're kind, and we praise and thank you for being kind and gracious and good to us and bringing us into your forever family. We praise and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.